You know what I thought about the other day is there has been much Michael Jordan conversation lately.
Are you missing it?
I am missing it. I don't really still don't know what to say other than, you know, I mean,
he's the greatest of all time.
He hasn't called me back.
Oh, well,
I mean,
does he have your number?
I mean, I've left multiple emails.
Were they desperate?
Yes.
Were there pictures of you nude?
No.
That's good.
Good. Well, no. Good Lord.
I mean, because that will definitely get a not callback. I'm just saying. Trust me
Yes.
on that.
That will get a nude pictures will get a non-callback
Yeah.
from Michael Jordan.
Yeah, maybe his people or the FBI,
Oh, yeah.
but
Okay.
not Michael Jordan himself.
Well, there were no nude pictures sent to Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
This time?
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us again for another rousing edition. Rousing edition of Podcasts for Good. This is episode 23 of season one, Home Ownership. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. And my co-host, as always, is
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator.
And we're here to talk to you about home ownership. Don't leave, people. This was actually
I like that you keep encouraging people to not leave. I think this is like the second or third one in a row. Please don't leave.
Don't leave.
Don't.
I think it's nice to say as a host, don't leave. I have an expectation. I'd like for you to stay.
Yeah, but are you setting the bar really low? Like,
no,
oh, I'm
no.
Gonna, it's time
but,
for me to take a bathroom
but
break.
But home ownership is not always that exciting.
Well, there's a lot of things that aren't that exciting.
Right.
And we're going to talk about all of them.
Yes. That's right. But this one especially is interesting.
Let me just drop that needle.
Home
Boom.
Ownership.
Yeah.
Boom. And everyone went, what?
Yeah,
home
mine's
ownership?
Blown.
Get
mine's
out
blown.
Of town. So chances are if you're listening to the podcast, you have one, a home. Either you rent it, though, or you own it. And it's actually a pretty big deal historically in this country. It has been one of those things that's been pitched to populations since we can remember how important home ownership is
that's
in your
true.
In your life.
That is true.
It is definitely an interesting like layered conversation as it has never been before.
That
There's
is true.
So many different things. That now go into it that I don't think used to maybe be factors.
No, I don't think so.
There's all. This is one of those interesting conversations where there's like socioeconomics, there's race, there's the economy from 2008
yeah.
till now and pre 2008.
Mm-hmm.
There's politics. There's so much involved with home ownership today.
Yeah.
That I think it's a really interesting conversation.
Well,
to talk
just
about.
The simple fact that it seems that in order to own a home and get started in that process, you need professionals. You need professional help the entire
right.
way.
Right.
Like you can't just go out and be like, hey, that home is for
yeah.
sale. I like it. Gonna buy it.
I'm
done.
I'm gonna say something that sounds conspiratorial.
Oh, okay.
So I think that there is an entire industry today that's
mm-hmm.
built on finding ways for those of us shopping for a home
yeah.
to get the least amount of home for the most dollars.
Okay. I can see that. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I could be saying something extremely.
I think that's called capitalism. You know.
Yeah. because what has happened over time is when you this is simplifying it of course, but you used to go to your local bank
mm-hmm.
and yes, there was still bureaucracy involved. You're
sure.
making a major purchase.
Mm-hmm.
You used to go to your local bank, your local lender, and your local lender would lend you the money. And the reason why mortgages were so long, 30 years, was because the bank wanted to guarantee that they could get their money back
yeah.
from you, right?
Yeah.
But they were on the hook for it.
Yeah.
Right? So they were the ones who gave you the loan, and it was based on your credit score. It was based on different factors like your debt-to-income ratio, your rental history. All these
mm-hmm.
sort of things were taken into play. There could have been a chance that you even knew your lender who was actually giving you the money.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
You had a relationship.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, has morphed over time, and you can say whatever you want as to why that has morphed. If
yeah.
you're on one side, it's because there's been crippling deregulation. If
mm-hmm.
you're on the other side, it's because bad actors have gotten involved, and
yeah.
they have.
Yeah.
Either way, we have built this giant faceless cushion between you and the home you want to buy.
Yeah. Right?
So you go and it's a real estate agent, and then it's from the real estate agents, it's your lender, and from your lender, it could be an underwriter, and from mm-hmm. your underwriter, it could be this person. And then there's the inspectors, and then there's this yeah. and the appraisers, and there's all these things now
it
that have built
industry.
Over time
yeah.
that has created an industry
yeah.
where it's an intimidating experience to buy a home.
Yeah.
And imagine if you're not all that well educated,
mm-hmm.
if you don't have a ton of money and you know you're going to have to stretch yourself to even get in a home.
Yeah.
Right. And your job status is not like
it's not cemented.
It's
yeah.
not cemented. Imagine how if it's intimidating for a regular, just affluent person to go out and buy a home. Mm-hmm. Imagine what it's like for somebody who like has all those factors against them.
Yeah, no, it would be intimidating as all get out. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not affluent, but I'm also not on the super low poverty side.
Yeah,
and I am intimidated beyond
Absolutely.
Belief.
It's totally intimidating.
Yeah.
Right, because first of all, we've noticed that the prices are out of control.
Yes, that is terrible.
So the price is an intimidation mm-hmm. to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have all these other factors where these quote-unquote experts have
yeah.
to come in here and help you every spot. They're making you put initials and signatures mm-hmm. on paper. You don't have the time to
yeah.
like sit down and review them.
And if you do have questions, like, is it... Do you feel like the person you're talking to mm-hmm. is giving you all the answers that you need,
right.
that they're being truthful,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that they're not saying, you know, like
right.
selling you short.
Right.
Like, do you need to go get a second
right.
opinion? Like
yeah,
with
that,
a doctor. Like,
yeah.
you have cancer. Well, I'm going to get a second opinion. Uh-huh. No, you just have a headache.
I think
like,
you do. I think you do need to get a second opinion.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
one of those industries
yeah.
now.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think
is.
You had to do that before.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I always love the like those forms. They're always my favorite. When people like put a form in front of your face and it's like 8 pages long.
And they expect you to sign it right
and
there.
They go, this just says that you know, you won't give us a call after 5 PM.
Uh-huh.
And you're
like,
you said all those things to tell me not to call you after 5? Like why is this
like
8 pages long?
You can just verbally say that to me.
Right.
I'm cool with you just telling me.
I know.
My business hours are 8 to 5.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
They hand you these like the Constitution they hand you.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is just saying that my name is Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all the language within what is written is just like in
it's Shakespeare.
Like it's Shakespeare. It's lawyer speak. It's technical.
Heretofore,
writing.
Henceforth on the 4th July.
Further referred to as patient. You know,
right? It's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. So we sat down with two organizations that help people through the complicated process of home ownership,
mm-hmm.
especially folks who are underprivileged or have inherent historical disadvantages to
yeah.
owning a home. One was the Washington Home Ownership Resource Center. We talked to the deputy director, Denise Rodriguez. And the other was the Way Back In. We talked to program director, Tanya Ward. But before we get to that stuff.
Yeah.
We have the question of the pod. Hit me with it, Heather Lucas.
All right. Philip Kerrigan.
Yes.
If you.
Yeah.
Now, this is fantasy land, okay?
Fantasy land.
Like you being a velociraptor. It's fantasy land, okay?
That's not fantasy.
He's going to be a dinosaur.
Thanks, Dad. I'll be a dinosaur.
If you
yeah.
could build an addition to any home that's not a standard addition, like a bedroom, a bathroom, a kitchen, right?
Okay.
If you could build any addition to
yeah.
a home, what would you add?
Obviously, is a man cave an addition?
Yeah, dude.
Okay.
You'd go man cave?
I'll go man cave, but...
Man caves aren't standard on homes.
Okay.
So.
Let me give you two.
Okay.
Because the man cave is definitely one that I would mm-hmm. love to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I need the. I mean, your standard man cave. I need the big screen TV. I would love a kegerator in there at some point. you know, I'd have my wall with my sports memorabilia,
mm-hmm.
all that business.
Yeah,
that would be what I want.
Okay,
what I think I can attain.
And then you're the guardian of that room. No
yes.
one can enter unless you say
yes.
you are permitted.
You must be this tall to come into the room.
Nice.
Right. Like, so 6-year-olds,
sorry, kids,
for example, are not allowed in the man cave. The other one
mm-hmm.
that is more fantasy driven.
Oh yeah.
Is a full length basketball court. So
nice.
I can take on Michael Jordan anytime I want. Michael, you come on the show.
Yeah.
I will have built, by the time you come on the show, I will have built.
That is true. You will have saved up enough money.
My basketball
and
court.
Have built a basketball
then you can
court
come
onto one of your child's
me.
Bedrooms. Mm-hmm.
You can come and play me.
I like it.
I think that'll work out well.
Full-length basketball court.
There you go. Full-length
nice.
Basketball court. That's where I'm going. What about you?
I don't know. I go back and forth between something like movie theater.
Oh, yeah. Right? That would be good.
See, that's kind of what I thought your answer would be.
I like that.
Or swimming pool, like full in length.
Ground.
Yeah, in ground. Okay. But not like you can have it so that there yeah. is, you can reel back the ceiling.
Yes.
So you can have it be like kind of
yeah.
outdoorsy.
Yeah.
But you can shut that ceiling so the leaves don't get all up in there.
There, okay. Because I was about to ask you, in this mm-hmm. fantasy, are you also hiring a fantasy person to clean up your pool?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Because that's the problem with
pools. Pool boy. Pool boy, I need another drink. Ma'am, aren't you supposed to be swimming in your swimming pool? Pool boy, don't ask questions.
Pool boy, get mama another pina colada.
I know it's Thursday at 11 a.m., but mama needs a drink.
5 o'clock somewhere, middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, I'm into that. You know yeah. what? I do like the movie theater angle. I probably, if you were talking like, because man cave is kind of common. Every dude says man cave. So I would probably switch my first two answers to mm-hmm. basketball court to continue
theater?
Playing Michael Jordan mm-hmm. and then movie theater.
Well, if you ever get to play Michael Jordan, I'll come and I'll play Michael Jordan.
Obviously.
I'm your 3-point shooter.
Got it. You'll be my John Paxson.
I will be.
Only people, mm-hmm. the one person who's listening to this podcast knows, there's only one who yeah. probably knows what that is.
I'll be Tony Kukoc over here.
Oh, look at you.
I know.
Wow, this feels like a Chicago radio show in 1997.
Right? Yeah, we fit right in.
Let me tell you something about that Scottie Pippen. He's going to be something.
Sausage, bratwurst, beer. Cheese. Go.
That's a baker's dozen for me, Chet.
Yay.
All right. So now that we've taken the home ownership podcast off the rails,
yep.
we're going to go ahead and toss to the first interview, which is Denise Rodriguez, the Deputy Director of Washington Home Ownership Resource Center. Here is the interview with Denise. All right, so we're sitting down with the Deputy Director of Washington Home Ownership Resource Center, Denise Rodriguez. Denise, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So can you talk a little bit about the history of Washington Home Ownership Resource Center and what you guys do for the community?
I sure can. Washington Home Ownership Resource Center, or WHRC mm-hmm. for short, was formed in 1996, and we were really provided a hotline for people who wanted to become homeowners, but who needed a little bit of help to achieve that dream. So maybe they needed down payment assistance, or perhaps they were very low income and were a candidate for a Habitat for Humanity self-help program. So that is how we got our start. In about 2007, we started to get a lot of calls about foreclosure prevention. Yeah. And so that really became a big part of our portfolio. Mm-hmm. Our mission is to increase and preserve home ownership in the state of Washington. So both encouraging people to become smart homeowners and have a sustainable home ownership experience, but also helping to prevent foreclosure or loss of home ownership is also within our mission. And pretty much ever since then, foreclosure has been a really big part of our portfolio of work. In 2011, the state passed the Foreclosure Fairness Act to try and put some boundaries and rules mm-hmm. around the foreclosure process for folks experiencing that crisis. And they created a statewide housing counseling hotline as part of that act. And WHRC has been managing and operating the hotline okay. ever since. So we get calls from all over the state, people who are in various stages of mortgage default or related to tax delinquency mm-hmm. Or experiencing other issues. And we provide them information, help them understand the process, what their rights are during the process, and what resources are available to them. And then we help connect them to those resources. So sometimes that's a HUD-approved housing counseling agency. Sometimes it's low to no fee legal aid, depending on what their situation is. So we really keep people from having to make many different phone calls that are sort of a shot in the dark and they're mm-hmm. not sure that it's the right place. We help them get to the right place after just one phone call.
Cool.
So that is, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
What we do.
Cool.
Nice. So, of course, we had the whole crisis in 2008. What do you think the housing market is like now in Washington State?
Well, we're still in crisis.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because if you see the news, it feels like it's
everything's like, fine. Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Well, it's not fine if you're a home buyer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're just in a different kind of crisis. Right now, we're in an affordability crisis.
Right.
So it is really, really hard for people who are making a moderate income or even a fairly median income to be able to access homeownership in a way that is going to, you know, be smart and stable for them. So people are having to reach a little bit further than they might be comfortable with. Programs that offer assistance to people are finding that their resources are stretched really thin.
Yeah.
So it's just a really challenging time. And I know we hear a lot about the homelessness crisis. We hear a lot about the rental affordability crisis. We are also experiencing an affordability crisis at the homeownership end of the housing spectrum as well. And also, there are still people experiencing foreclosure.
Yeah.
So certainly not anything at the level of the systemic crisis that we were experiencing, you know, between 07 and 2012, I would say.
Yeah.
But it's still a crisis for every family that's experiencing it. And we still do find that the guidelines, the rules set out by the Foreclosure Fairness Act do still make a difference for those homeowners when they're trying to interact and kind of come up with a solution.
Right.
So I think, you know, even though the systemic crisis is over, you know, like I said, it's still a crisis for those families, those individuals, even for the neighborhood, you know, because it can cause a lot of disruption at the neighborhood level as well.
Sure.
So we really do try to, you know, help people with that.
So do you think that the crisis we're currently in is a symptom of the crash and basically how we reacted to it? Or do you feel like that's something that was, it was making its upward trajectory even then and it still has never stopped? Like, that was just curious to me, you know?
Yeah. So I think that during the crisis, a lot of homeowners lost their homes and they became renters. And I do think that that put additional pressure on the rental market.
Sure.
It created an availability
crisis,
which drove prices up. But mostly, I think it's just there's a huge influx of people moving to the Puget Sound area. So, you know, particularly in Puget Sound area, also in Spokane, kind of all along the I-5 corridor, we just have a lot of new people moving to the area, and we don't have enough housing of any kind, home ownership or rental, to really put those people, and so it drives the prices up. I think also there's just not as much inventory from a home buying perspective as we might want to see in the area, so that creates more competition and also drives prices up. So people are having to sort of go further and further away from where their job is in order to find something. I mean, we've all heard that sort of drive till you qualify. It's getting really hard to drive that far and still be able to commute to work,
especially in the I-5 corridor. I mean,
exactly.
Forget it.
And you know, I was just in Spokane over the weekend, and you know, there were some articles in the Spokesman Review talking about that there's a lot of competition right now for the affordable homes that are on the market, and so they are also seeing an influx of people moving there and more competition for the affordable homes. So it's not just the I-5 corridor. Yakima also is having a lot of competition for affordable housing.
Where do you see it going? I mean, what are some of the things that could bring relief to that sort of thing? Are they around the horizon, or is it something that would, it's going to take legitimate work, you think?
Oh boy, if I had the answer to that. I think, well, absolutely we need more public funding for creating affordable housing, creating new units. I think also more down payment assistance to be able to help people bridge the gap between their income and what you need to be able to get into a homeowner situation. So absolutely more funding is definitely something that would help alleviate some of the pressure. I think a world-class regional transportation system that would help people
be able to live in different areas.
That's right. So you can live in Des Moines and commute to wherever you're commuting by train. Because byproduct of what's happening in the housing market is that we now also have a big traffic problem, right? So
That makes total sense.
My personal assessment is that people are going to continue to move this to the area. And unless we are really, really focusing on trying to address the homeownership needs and the housing needs, we're going to continue to see these problems until the character of the region is no longer what we all have enjoyed for the time that we've lived here, and until it becomes a place people don't want to move anymore. So when we're LA and we have 3-hour traffic to, you know, that's when people will stop moving here, and then maybe the market will calm
down. Feels close. Seattle is pretty horrible.
I think we're at right now the Puget Sound area, might actually be specifically the Seattle metropolitan area, is experiencing, I think, 18 months running as the largest growth in home prices year over year of all of the markets that they, you know, track nationally.
That's crazy. So,
yeah, I mean it's pretty hard to see a scenario where you can get an affordable home in the Seattle area.
It does still happen anecdotally. So yes, and I know, you know, anecdotal evidence is not as, you know, sound as statistical evidence, but I know people in real life who have actually found things, you know, under say $450,000 in
like
Seattle city limits.
Yeah.
It is. It's really hard. I think one thing people are doing to be competitive is they're writing letters to the sellers about sort of why they would be a good person to choose to take on stewardship of the home, what they're going to contribute to the community. I have definitely heard that sellers take that into consideration.
Cool.
And I think also being willing to get something that might need a little bit of cosmetic work and be able to put in that, you know, fixer-upper attitude. Can also help people be able to find something, and just being really vigilant that you are basically checking the websites every single day so that when something does pop up, you are right there, you're ready. Another piece of that, I think, would be knowing what you want, being very clear about what you want, especially if you are in some kind of relationship and you're buying with somebody else, you know, be on the same page with your partner so that when you see the thing that is the right thing for you, you're ready to pounce. One thing that helps with that is pre-purchase counseling. You can go to get pre-purchase counseling. They the counselor will go through your budget with you, look at your expenses, look at your income, and help you figure out what kind of payment would be a reasonable payment for you to afford. And can even help you figure out in some ways what are your priorities for what you're looking for. So you might see a place that meets 3 out of 5 priorities and decide that, you know, that's the right one. But that can really help you have all the questions answered before you start the process. And also making sure that your funding is in place. So you've already applied for the loan. You've already been approved. You're really ready to go so that on that first day of the open house, you can get your offer in before anybody else. You know, maybe that will help you have an edge.
So let's ask another simple question. And that is...
These are such simple questions.
Aren't they always?
That is home ownership for people of color.
Yes.
So do you think it's harder for people of color or even specific ages to get a home? Okay.
Yes, I do.
Start and finish. There you go.
No, I do. I think that, you know, there have been articles recently. There's been studies done that it is much harder for people of color to get approved for the same amount of loan that that a white person would get approved for. They have in the past. I know we know during the crisis that people of color were steered into subprime lending when they had the same creditor and they had the same credit profile as white people. So I do think that there continues to be discrimination in that field. There are a lot of protections in place through the regulatory agencies to prevent that to happen. And it's really, really important that we don't allow those regulations to be weakened, which is something that we are in danger of right now, where we're at with the current process at the federal level. There is a lot of attempt to sort of weaken what protections there are, and we really need to be vigilant about that.
Do you think that Washington State is doing a better job with getting loans and treating people fairly, or do you think we're kind of like in the middle?
I don't think I can answer that question.
We've seen a lot of stuff where Washington has been more of a kind of a leader, or like they're, you know, top 10, top 20 as far as the nation goes. So I am curious about that.
Yeah. I would be curious about that in particular. I mean, I think we certainly have not been in the news for bad behavior in the way that some other places have been. But I, you know, I don't have statistical information about us specifically to be able to answer that question.
Does Washington Home Ownership Resource Center, do they do anything or do you does your organization partner with other organizations to do any sort of policy or advocacy work?
We do, and we've been doing more of that recently. So we partner with all of the home ownership organizations across the state. So for some, that's a referral relationship, and we are trying to maintain awareness of what their program parameters are and who might be a qualified applicant for them, so that we can make sure we're directing our hotline callers to the right resources. So we have relationships with, you know, the community land trusts, with the Habitats and other self-help programs, with down payment assistance programs, home buyer education. So, you know, we do have those relationships, and it does come up that they're, as we all are working in the same field, we're aware of what the pain points are. So we have been more and more, I think, cooperating together and working together to try to make a difference.
Excellent.
This last session, there were some improvements made to the Foreclosure Fairness Act. So there was some increased protection for consumers and some additional funding for the housing counseling that consumers who are experiencing foreclosure need to help resolve the issues. We also, this last year, have been really aware of tax delinquency foreclosure as an issue, and I think an increasing issue for folks. So we've been paying attention to that, and also partnering with organizations around senior homeownership issues. You know, going back to your question about if it's harder for people of color to access homeownership, which I think my answer probably wasn't actually a very good answer, but
No, it was great. I just thought it was pretty solid.
I think one thing I will say is that for many people of color, their home is, and actually probably true for a lot of Americans, your home is the single largest asset you're ever going to have. But it's also your home, and it's where you live, and you're attached to it. So for people to lose their home to foreclosure really also means that they don't have that available to pass that on to their children. Wealth creation in this country is very much tied to inheritance. You know, inheriting wealth from your parents is the single largest wealth creator that there is. And because people of color have had, you know, laws preventing them from accessing homeownership in the past and are more likely to experience financial hardship, we do really try to take a lens of when we are helping people of color preserve their home so that they can pass it on to the next generation. That is helping to maybe not reduce the racial wealth gap, but not make it
bigger.
Right? So one thing we saw during the crisis is that in particular Latino people are more likely to invest in bricks and mortar investment. So they were very much impacted by the crisis. They don't tend to diversify as much with stocks and bonds. They really like that bricks and mortar and the real estate. So when they, you know, when the foreclosure crisis hit, a lot of wealth was lost from the Latino community and communities around the state. So I think that's one thing we're trying to be involved in right now, helping people be able to maintain their home ownership into their elder years, be able to stay connected to their community, and also have something to pass on to the next generation.
I'm sure, too, with if you lose your home at any point, like you're losing a part of your identity. Like it's a place where you live. It's a place where your kids are, your family is. So if your home is something that you lose, then how do you gain back kind of that? I am this person, and I'm like a worthy person out in the world.
I would say to that, yes, it is really hard for people to recover from it. And also, you know, I've never heard of anyone who just woke up one day and said, I'm going to stop paying my mortgage. I'm done with that. It. It's always some other crisis.
Like there's a healthcare thing.
You know, cancer, divorce, mm-hmm. death of a spouse, a protracted illness that led to mm-hmm. sort of not having yeah. the bills be maintained, yeah. and then a death of the spouse, or, you know, of a parent. It's always some other crisis happening in the family, and then the foreclosure on top of it. So it is definitely really challenging for people. And yes, you know, the kids are sort of losing, I can't remember what the statistic is, but every time kids move, they sort of lose a certain number of months of academic progress.
Yeah.
And people who are living in the same community for an extended period of time have all kinds of social supports that are available to them to help them be successful in all kinds of ways, not just as a homeowner, but just in general. And they lose those supports as well when they're forced to move. And then if they nowadays have to move outside of the area, which is what we would often see right now, you know, the whole community loses out on whatever the contributions were from that household.
Yeah.
What barriers do you or your clients encounter that prevent people from owning a home?
The most common barrier to becoming a homeowner is your debt to income ratio.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is a really important factor when the lender is deciding how much house you can afford. Uh-huh. It's all based on what kind of payment you could afford. And so there's an equation. They're looking at how much debt you have versus how much income you have and what's the difference between that. That's how much payment you could afford.
Yeah.
However, there are two ways to solve that. One is to work on reducing your debt, and one is to work on increasing your income. Mm-hmm. So we often find when people do call us that maybe they're a couple years out from being ready to buy because they do need to work on that either. You know, either that's they need to, you know, move to a different job that it has a higher salary or, you know, have two incomes in the household instead of one income. But I think more frequently what we see is people try to manage reducing their debt. So reason to see a pre-purchase counselor would be that they can tell you, you really need to work on getting this debt down and give you a referral to debt management or give you a plan. They're actually required to give you an action plan. It's a HUD requirement when you go to counseling. So they give you an action plan that tells you what you need to do to get ready.
Wow, that's
really
good.
And you can kind of work on that plan. I can attest on a personal level that, you know, I had a lot of credit card debt. I spent, you know, quite some time being really focused on paying down that debt. Mm-hmm. There are some strategies that a counselor can help you with to pay it down faster.
Yeah.
And I was able to really get that down to a pretty low level so that my student loans, which lots of us have student loans and we hear them
forever
in the news all the time about what a barrier there are. But I really got to the point where my student loans were sort of the only major payment that I had in a month. And so it created a lot more room for me to be able to afford to buy. And as a nonprofit employee, I, you know, certainly not considered high income.
Right.
And I actually used one of the down payment assistance programs that's available in our state to be able to buy my home.
Yep. That's cool. So one of the questions I like to ask a lot when we talk about issues like these sort of issues that, you know, have an up and down sway to them throughout history is do you think it could get better, or do you think we're on a good path? Do you think we're on a path where things could be better? Do you think it's possible for those lending practices that were so awful and really broke the world?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think those could become the norm again? Have we done enough to prevent something like this from happening again?
This is a tricky question because my bulk of my work does not focus as much on the lending.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not an expert on lending.
Yeah.
But I do know that we are in a place where at the federal level, you know, there are attempts being made to weaken regulations that were put into place to protect us from having another crisis. So there were protections put into place for consumers. There were regulations put into place for lenders. Mm-hmm. And those, both the protections and the regulations, are sort of in a lot of danger right now at the federal level. So I would say that it could happen again.
Mm-hmm.
If those changes are allowed to go forward.
Right.
And probably the only thing that will stop them from going forward is people who care getting on the phone and calling their representatives and their, you know, calling their congressional delegation and letting them know that they feel really strongly about this. You know, in general, we're very lucky in Washington State. We have two senators who are big fans of making sure consumers are protected, but it certainly helps them to know that we've got their back when they're having these debates. So I think the more people can be involved in raising their voice about these issues, the better.
Yeah, and vote.
Yeah,
right.
That would work. Vote.
Yes. So I always say it doesn't end with voting. Yeah. Like voting is the first step. Yeah. You know, it's great. If you've never voted before, definitely go
Let's
vote.
Let's do baby step one. Right. Vote.
Exactly. Register to vote. But if you vote all the time, then the next step is to like make some phone calls, send a letter. Yeah. Like that really does have a lot of meaning for the at the state level and at the congressional
communicate
level.
Communicate your needs and what you think is happening in the community.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I know here in Olympia, people work really intensely. They're just sort of around each other a lot, 24/7, kind of very intense. And they can get, I think, disconnected from what's happening in the district.
Oh, yeah.
And they rely on their constituents to let them know when something is, you know, if there's a new problem, they want you to let them know about it. So people get really intimidated about talking to their legislators or their congressional delegates. But I feel like they you know, you're actually doing them a service by letting them know when there's a thing happening that they need to know about, you know. Yeah, so
exactly. I think sometimes people forget that legislators work for us.
Right.
Like we're their boss.
Right.
So we have the ability, like it's something that we have to do to say, hey, this needs to change. This doesn't work for my city, my community, anything like that.
Absolutely.
Take a look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. The more engaged people are, I think the better the representation is.
Yeah.
So it's pretty important. And, you know, that's one thing that we've learned from being involved as WHRC. And, you know, I've been fairly active on a personal level with issues that I care about. And I've always been treated with respect, even when the person I'm talking to doesn't necessarily see things my way. So, you know, it's always a good experience.
Yeah. Great.
So let's say someone hears the podcast and they decide that they want to start giving to Washington Homeownership Resource Center.
Great.
Can you talk about what donations do for you guys?
Yes. So as I said, we run the hotline and we have two really knowledgeable, really experienced folks who staff that hotline and who know what the programs are and know what the income level rules are about. And, you know, the nuances of everything. And, you know, we need to be able to keep those people there answering the phone. And so for us, that is what support for the organization does. It keeps us able to answer that phone on a regular basis. Right now, the hotline is open during, you know, regular business hours, Monday through Friday. And we would like to keep it that way.
Yeah.
I think it's more effective for folks. You know, we would not want to have to go to where we're closed, you know, an extra day. So from our perspective, that's really the main thing that support goes to in supporting us. We also do work in partnership with other organizations, and we play a role in that community of helping to convene conversations about how can we work more effectively together? How can we, you know, utilize our fewer resources more efficiently by partnering? And so that's another thing that we do that benefits people would be sort of convening our partners to be able to figure out how we can all, you know, be more efficient together. So that's another way that contributions to the organization help us provide services.
Nice.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
And do you have any upcoming events or any other programs that you wanted to highlight before we end?
Well, Affordable Housing Week is the week of May 11th, which I believe is when this podcast
is airing.
That's right. So that's very exciting. There are lots of things happening out in the communities around that. And, you know, we have a couple of events coming up, but they're not public events. They're, you know, partnership, convening partnership events.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have an event coming up for all of the statewide, you know, or agencies across the state that do work in home ownership. And we're going to actually be talking about what are the policies that are inhibiting us from helping the people we want to help or helping us, and what can we do about that. We're also going to talk about some innovations happening in the field that might help us provide services to more people, help create more homeowners.
Nice.
So we have that event coming up. I'm really excited about it.
So you mentioned the hotline and that you've got a couple of folks who work on it. Can you give everyone listening the number for
the hotline? I would be thrilled to do that. So if you are in need of assistance, you can call our hotline. It's 877-894-HOME, which is 4663.
Okay, there you go. So folks who have issues can call that number and get hopefully get the help they need. Denise Rodriguez, thank you for coming on the podcast and talking to us a little bit about what you do.
Thanks for letting me nerd out about homeownership and the housing market for so long.
Excellent.
It's fun. Thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
All right.
Okay, that was our interview with Deputy Director Denise Rodriguez of the Home Ownership Resource Center. Very cool lady talking about some, I think, really systemic issues with home ownership. I thought it was really great. We're going to now toss it straight into our interview with the Program Director, Tanya Ward of Way Back In. So here is that interview. All right. So we are here with Program Director for Way Back In, Tanya Ward. Tanya, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Tanya, why don't you talk to us a little bit about Way Back In, the history of your organization and what you guys do for the community?
Okay, so we started back in 1991, so we've been around for a while. We are a transitional housing program for homeless families with kids. So all the families that we help have at least one child in their household. We have 11 housing units that are scattered between Renton, Tukwila, and Kent, so kind of South King County area. The families can stay with us anywhere from, in our short-term program, 4 to 6 months, just, you know, give them some time to find a job if they're not working, kind of straighten out their credit a little bit, and then locate their next longer-term housing. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a two-year program where families that are in some kind of training program, college, vocational training, some sort of program, can stay up to 2 years while they finish that and get on their feet.
Nice.
Awesome. Awesome.
So are there, in your experience at least, are there barriers to becoming a homeowner that are greater for someone who's experienced homelessness or housing insecurity?
Yes, I think it is harder. I think most of the families that we see have never really had a stable living environment, even mm-hmm. when they were growing up. Oftentimes, their credit is usually not in a position where they can purchase a home.
Sure.
So yeah, that's part of what we do, is just kind of work with them and try to get that credit score higher. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While they're staying there, you also assist them in getting their credit scores up. And
we do. We just have them print a credit report and yes. then kind of go through it with them. You know, we're not experts in that. But
right.
Just go through it with them and see if there's anything they can clean up. If it's, you know, really a detrimental thing to their pathway to, you know, self-sufficiency, they can, we'll refer them to a more intense credit,
right,
credit
right.
program.
How often do you see success? Do you see people leave Way Back In and then find housing or find rental properties? How often do you guys see success?
So we do. We have 11 units right now.
Right.
And each year we have about roughly, it varies a little bit, but about 85% are successful.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we consider successful either longer term transitional housing or, you know, into their own rental.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So how difficult can it be for someone who's moving from being homeless to transitional housing? Can you talk a little bit about how much of a burden that is on that particular person?
It depends on where they're coming from, location-wise. Mm-hmm. A lot of our families have transportation issues as well. They're either not in a position to have their own vehicle, so then they're reliant on the bus system,
right.
Or catching rides with friends. A lot of times the families come in with, you know, just their clothes.
Yeah.
And all of our units are furnished, so they don't have to worry about, you know, finding furniture and that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the age range you see come into your place?
We have young everyone's a parent, first of all.
Oh,
but
wow.
we do have young parents that maybe just have a newborn.
Yeah.
We've had that situation, and then we've had, you know, older people that are legally in charge of their grandkids.
Yeah.
In the same situation. So
yeah,
kind of a big age range.
Yeah. And how do folks find you? How do folks find your organization? How does that usually work?
We're connected with the 211 system.
Oh, okay. So yeah,
we're listed
yeah.
on
United
there.
Way's 211.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so then they refer folks to you guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. And
that's
then
cool.
also like schools and churches and all those kind of organizations have our number too.
You mentioned an average stay. Is there A time limit that people can be in your
2 years. So 24 months is all that's allowed in transitional housing.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Awesome.
So what barriers do you encounter working with any of your clients that prevent them from owning a home? Is it just solely the credit report and like what's going on financially for them, or is there more to it than that?
It's usually that, but also just strictly income. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people we see are, you know, minimum wage jobs. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to encourage families to look at kind of a longer term goal, sure. You know, different ways to increase their income. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this question, because you guys are based in Seattle, correct? Is that right?
South King County.
South King mm-hmm. County. We had an individual on this podcast from the Washington Homeownership Resource Center. And what she said was that she notices that the problem of homelessness in transitional housing is not getting better. Is that the same you're experiencing? Does it feel like in this current climate you guys are never have an empty spot or anything like that? Does it feel like it's worse or better?
I don't know if it's worse, but it's definitely, we definitely do not have empty units.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
There's a far greater amount of people that need housing than we can provide or any of the other agencies yeah. can provide.
And what sort of common denominators do you see for the folks who come in terms of what they're struggling with most?
Mostly it's income. You know, their income is just not high enough, or if it's just barely enough, they're, you know, scraping by, and they were scraping by for quite a while
right.
until some kind of financial,
right.
you know, mistake happened and then lost their place that they mm-hmm. were in.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about that before with other themes yeah. on this podcast, is the idea that the economy got better. Yes, it's true, but it felt like there were these group of folks pre-2008 that were not playing with a net, so to speak, right? And mm-hmm. those people went from potentially having issues to they definitely have issues today. Like they fell into poverty just like anybody else. Have you noticed that as well, that there are families out there that probably 5-6 years ago may not have had the same struggles they have today?
Yes, I think rents have increased so much.
Yeah, crazy in Seattle, too. Right, it's right. unbelievable.
Right, and if your income is not, you know, increasing at that same pace, it yeah. just makes everything unaffordable.
Yeah.
Your area is the area that has the minimum wage of $15 an hour or whatever. Is that correct?
I think there are parts over kind of near the airport, like a little bit into Tukwila area. Mm-hmm.
And you haven't quite noticed that has helped with this particular situation?
We have not noticed that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's tough.
I imagine, too, like for some people having to have multiple jobs, especially if you've got a minimum wage job, just to pay rent, maybe even in South Seattle, like how do you manage to do
that? South Thurston County at minimum wage is tough to deal with now.
No, I was just going to say, you talked about like 85% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys get any feedback from clients who've moved from your units to other housing to say, hey, this is what we're doing now?
We try to. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we'll reach out to families that have successfully moved on just to, you know, kind of see where they're at, you know, a year or two or five down the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you get anything like, well, I've gone to school, I've gotten a better job?
Some, or, yeah. Okay. Some have moved on and continue to remain successful. Yeah, that's always what we like to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Has anybody ever come back and actually been a part of your organization later? Like folks move out and then they...
We've had a couple come back and do like painting projects and different, you know, one-time volunteer type things, which is always nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's totally. Awesome.
Yeah.
How many folks do you have working at the charity? How many people actually?
So we are really small. We just have actually myself as the only administrative type program person. We do have a part-time maintenance person as well, but other than that, it's just volunteers.
Volunteer run.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
It is.
That's awesome. So let's say somebody hears the podcast
mm-hmm.
and they want to start giving to Way Back In. What do those donations do for your organization?
So they keep the lights on and the utilities on mm-hmm. in our housing units.
Mm-hmm.
The families that are in there do pay a small program fee every month, which just gives them an opportunity to participate in their own stability. It's capped at just 10% of income, so it's very small. other than that, we do all of the maintenance work. We do all of the cover all the utilities, everything. So
oh,
any
wow.
donations go really? Right yep, directly to
that's fantastic.
Keeping, yeah, keeping so those homes running.
The program fee covers like the rent, the utilities, anything like that?
It just goes to program fee is all we okay. call it. It's such a small amount. Usually, you know, it ranges, but anywhere from 75 to, you know, 150 a month that sure. these families are paying. So it's not, it's really not covering very much, but it just gives them a chance to participate in, you know, keeping their family and their kids housed somewhere
yeah.
safely.
Yeah. And then they could take, say, that $1,000 that they would be paying for rent and
right.
do something else with that in
right.
the future. Yeah.
Right. Save it and hopefully yeah. have first and last and deposit saved up.
Yeah. 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 Cause of course that's like thousands of dollars.
Right.
Alone,
you can't even
right.
do that anymore.
No.
So,
I guess I had another question that made me kind of think of, when folks come in, are these folks who, they have a job and there's just no way they're going to make it anymore? Is that really kind of more what you see? Or is it folks who have lost their job and they got nowhere else to go?
So we see both.
Oh, really?
We have some families that come in and they're already working a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of, you know, if they're staying with a friend and, you know, trying to find a rental, you know, they might be helping with bills and stuff. And it's just really hard to save up that money
yeah.
to get into a place.
Right.
We also see families that, you know, don't currently have a job. So that's immediately one of the things we start working with them
yeah.
on.
Yeah. yeah. Okay. So you guys even help with maybe a little bit of job placement.
We do. All the families meet with me every week, mm-hmm. and we just kind of go through goals and what they're, you know, whatever is stopping them from becoming self-sufficient.
Yeah. So. How about budgets? I mean, do you help folks even with some of that, like a
we
little
do.
Bit?
We do. We do. We do refer them to, like, some of the local banks offer financial management classes.
Cool.
So we refer them to those. And then we... In our weekly meetings, we do try to, you know, cover a little bit of the basics as far as, you know, this is how much income you have coming in,
yeah.
you know, what expenses do you have, and, you know, just try to get them to look at, you know, not only next week, but, you know, a year down the road,
sure.
a couple years down the road.
Well, yeah, that I'm sure would help them be able to build a future for where they're going
right.
after transitional housing.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And so you kind of make it sound like you can't, it sounds like you guys are involved in both other with other private organizations like United Ways and then also for-profit stuff. Do you also deal with any sort of local governments or anything like that?
Because we operate some units in the city of Tukwila yeah. and Renton, we do work with them as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. A multi across the board there.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
And it's just you doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
yeah.
Good job.
<You're right.
laughs> We do have a really strong board of directors, so I should say that.
Okay.
Definitely.
Cool.
Right.
Shout
on,
out
yeah.
to the board of directors.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, do you have any programs that you want to highlight or any events that are coming up for Way Back In?
So we do have one other small program that we do a couple times a month where we try to catch a few families that are just on the brink of losing their own place.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we do help with overdue rent or utilities.
Awesome.
Okay.
So we do that usually two or three times a month. We'd like to do more, but it's just it gets expensive. And
right.
Yeah.
It's hard. But we try to catch those families that would otherwise need our, you know, our housing services and help them stay on track.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they've already got a place, then yeah, try to keep them in it.
We have just one big fundraiser a year, and it's this year it's going to be in October. And it's dinner, auction, silent auction, kind of your typical fundraiser for nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
It's held at Renton Technical College.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, October 6th.
One of the CFD participating agencies,
indeed.
Renton Technical College. Indeed. There you go. We should get the Renton Technical people out.
Yeah.
And give them contribution forms
at that event.
Yeah, we
that
are bam.
way back
look
years.
At that.
Yeah.
Across multiple exactly. platforms. There,
we're
awesome.
Connecting people. We like to connect. People.
Awesome. Well, Tanya, thanks for coming on the podcast. Tanya Ward, Program Director of Way Back In. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Appreciate it.
All right, so that was Tanya Ward talking a little bit about Way Back In and what they do for the community in South King County. Now, it sounds I've heard the rumor is that you have trivia for me.
I do.
Okay,
I do. So we did talk with both of these charities, and something that is a tie to both
yes.
of them is like if you are having struggles
right.
with owning a home,
yeah.
if there are people moving to this area, like it just it is a domino effect.
Right.
You're going to have problems with transportation. You're going to have problems with jobs.
Right.
You're going to have problems with people who are homeless.
Yes.
Finding homes and all that business.
Yes.
So I found first some stats about the homeless population.
Okay.
So they did that count in Seattle and in King County.
Yes.
So according to the Seattle Times, the Washington homeless population rose by 3.5% over the last year.
Okay.
Okay. So it has affected five of the state's six most populous counties.
Okay.
Okay. So there are in King County an increase in homelessness of 8%.
Got it.
So people who are homeless are still like, it's getting worse for people who are like on the cusp of whether or not they're going to be able to have like a transitional
home
or not.
That's right.
And then also,
yeah,
the median rent, according to Zillow for Washington State across the state, what do you think it is? This is trivia question number one.
I'm going to say for like a one bedroom.
Yeah, it didn't give any specifics, okay?
I'm going to say the median rent is, I'm going to go high. I'm going to go $1,100.
Not high enough, son.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Yeah, so according to Zillow, Washington State, statewide median rent, $1,652.
Oh my gosh. That is less than my mortgage.
That's craziness. That is craziness.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and you don't even have a basketball court yet.
I know.
Yet. All right. So, trivia question two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Half of homeowners think half of homeowners have two of these items at their home right now. What is that item?
Half of homeowners.
Two of these items.
Two of these items.
Mm-hmm. And it's not something that's just like built into your home.
Oh, so like a refrigerator doesn't count.
A refrigerator, you could say it, but that doesn't. It's not a refrigerator.
Okay. Let's go with an automobile, and let's go with a television.
I thought you were gonna say Dodge Stratus. No, barbecue.
Wow.
A barbecue.
Half of the people have barbecue.
Have two barbecues.
Have two barbecues?
Yeah.
What do you need two barbecues for?
Maybe you have a lot of people you're barbecuing for.
Ah man, my one barbecue isn't very good.
Yeah, I would say one barbecue should be enough.
Yeah. Okay. So, two barbecue grills.
Two barbecue grills.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Which of these amenities is likely to slow down a home's sale?
Okay. I'll
give you some options.
Okay.
Swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
A big backyard.
Okay.
A small backyard.
Yeah.
All of the above or none of the above?
None of the above.
All of the above.
All of the above.
All of the above. Okay. Yeah. People are intimidated by the big backyard.
People are intimidated by the big backyard?
How do I take care of it? Do I have the time for that? But the small backyard's not big enough.
Yeah.
And then a swimming pool.
Well, the maintenance on the swimming pool is something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely need a pool boy.
Okay. So what is likely to help a home sell more quickly?
Okay.
Having more than one story.
Yeah.
Superlative renovations. It didn't give a definition as to what that is.
Superlative renovation.
A small backyard, a big backyard, or none of the above?
I'm going to say superlative renovation.
It was none of the above, actually.
None of the above.
Yeah, so people don't want to walk upstairs. They don't want that.
Yeah, no, that is a thing.
Yeah.
So when we were home shopping, my wife was like, I want a ranch-style home. Do you know how many people want a friggin' ranch style.
I'm
going
to go with 99% of the people out there.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're going to need some stairs.
You are.
I mean, yeah, it'll lower your price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think stairs are fun. You can get yourself into like a basket or a pillow and just.
And my kids only fall down the stairs maybe once a week.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll be fine.
They're fine. No
it builds character.
No concussions yet.
Yeah. It builds character.
Yeah.
All right. Which of these is recommended for first-time homeowners? Considering less closet space than you think you need.
Okay.
Considering more closet space than you think you need. A dining room, no dining room, or all of the above.
Give me the question again.
So what, like when you're looking for your first home,
right.
What is recommended for first time homeowners? Less closet space, more closet space, a dining room, or no dining room?
I'm going to say a dining room.
Actually, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So both less closet space and no dining room.
Oh,
yeah, get rid of those things. And the last trivia question I have for you is more of a fun one.
Okay.
There are 4% of
Wait, those weren't fun?
Did you have fun?
I mean, I had fun. I like trivia, though.
You do like trivia.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was fun.
Okay.
All right. 4% of homeowners believe this fact about their house. What is that fact?
Oh, man.
Yeah, 4%, okay? Four, so it's not a lot.
So not a lot.
Yeah.
4% of homeowners think this fact about their house.
Mm-hmm.
That it's perfect.
That was so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that it's perfect, but that it's haunted.
Oh, no way. Yeah. They're 4% of the population.
4%, yeah.
Oh, man.
I could see with older houses, you know?
I got to say this, yeah. There are weird, creaky noises happening in my house, and it's new.
Yeah.
And it freaks you out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you're like, am I by myself?
Yes.
I know the wife and kids are gone, and I am literally by myself. Who is in the house with me?
I could see why.
Is it a murderer?
I could see why kids don't want nightlights.
Is it Michael Jordan?
It could be Michael.
Coming to play basketball?
Yeah. At midnight.
Yeah. He's like, you know what, Kerrigan? Now's the time
to
go.
You know what? I've been hearing you talk.
I had a protein shake.
I've been hearing you talk.
I'm ready.
And I'm tired of this.
I have my Gatorade and Wheaties.
No-name podcast host trampling all over my legacy.
Yeah.
I'm going to come out and I'm going to play you. Okay, so that was the interviews and amazing trivia. Great, great first trivia out of you. Nice job.
Is that my first trivia?
I think that's your first trivia. We'll go back. We'll check. We'll have the producers go back and check it out.
Do extra work, Heather.
Yeah. By producer, I mean you.
Yeah.
So that was our conversation with Washington Home Ownership Resource Center. And way back in, I want to thank them for coming on the show, give you some upcoming events. So one of the things I do want to say is that season two, we did have a schedule. We released it to charity. So if there's any charities listening, we actually still have two slots left. One of the themes is for civility in the media. I'm kind of surprised we haven't been able to
fill that civil
yet. That makes me sad because I feel like that's a very important conversation today. Mm-hmm. And then World AIDS Day, kind of surprised. So if you're a charity that deals with AIDS in any way, we'd love to have you on. I think it's a really compelling subject. PSRW was on May 9th. If you came by the Capitol campus at Olympia, you saw us out there with our fellow Secretary of State employees. So thank you everybody for that. Next week is our leadership breakfast on May 17th.
Yeah, it is.
From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Great Wolf, only 15 to 20 minutes away from the Capitol. If you haven't signed up yet, we encourage you to come. We're pretty close.
Yeah.
We're at over 400 people. So make sure you reserve your spot today, because this will be the last day to get in. And then on Memorial Day, which is May 28th, we do a small thing. We actually serve pastries and coffee to some of the folks at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial as just a thank you and a recognition for some of the folks who are there to see friends of theirs or family members who died during the conflict. We just want to be there as support. So if you're somebody who kind of recognizes Memorial Day as a big deal or has family members who served in Vietnam, we encourage you to come on down. It's really nice. It's kind of a nice thing to connect with everybody.
Yeah.
So that's basically it for this week's podcast. You know, we'll have other crazy stuff coming out very soon.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next time.
Bye.